Hello and welcome to the final sound file on Chauncey Vale Wildlife Sanctuary. This story surrounds the homestead called Day Dawn, home to Heather Chauncey, only daughter of Nan and Anthony Chauncey. To have a look around inside the house, you need to contact the caretakers to book a time that suits. The contact details are on the website and there is a small fee. Can I urge you to do that? Because inside the house is a remarkable snapshot of life many years ago. You can sit in the chair where Nan Chauncey used to sit and type her manuscripts of her wonderful children's stories, or wander into the kitchen area and imagine how you'd do all the food preparation, food storage and so on at that time when there was no refrigeration or electricity, and the house has never had electricity connected. This house was Heather's home for many years, and of course she has many memories associated with it, and here she is.
Now, this is the house that was given to my parents when they first married by my mother's eldest brother, and of course it was the house that I grew up in. It was built for my Uncle Cade when he was away at the First World War. He sent his pension payments, whatever the army gave you and tuppence halfpenny worth, back home, and asked that some land adjoining to his parents' land should be bought with it. And his father designed and built this house as a little holiday cottage for him, with some help from his next brother down, who ended up as a civil engineer specialising in concrete construction. It's one of those interesting things coming back to your old home. Because I went to boarding school when I was 9, in effect, when you go to boarding school, you leave home. So coming back was sort of coming back for holidays thereafter. And then I was home again for 2 or 3 years from 56 to 58. And I went to England for a couple of years, came back, and after that worked in town, so that I was only visiting thereafter. But it's a bit difficult to sort of deal with when you first have your home open to the public and decide what you're going to leave in it and what should be displayed and how you're going to organise this. My mother died in 1970 and my father went on living here until 88 when he died here, at which point the council took over ownership. We had arranged this for them. He had in fact only left them the wildlife sanctuary, and I donated the house and the land round it to go with it. And then we had to decide, you know, what do we do with the house at the committee stage, and how do we open it for the public and this sort of thing. So I decided we'd leave it furnished as it was in the early 60s, late 50s area, and keep that sort of furniture in it and the things that they brought out and had here that most people would remember. One works one's way through this, and probably it's a good thing in some ways to achieve a sense of peace with this kind of thing, I think, as both my parents died up here in the house, so that was something else that one had to sort of come to terms with. It was what they wanted, but, you know, not always very easy to deal with.
If you stand at the front door and look up, you can see the old shingles under the corrugated iron roof. And if you look down at the doorstep, you'll notice that it's very worn. But as Heather explained, it's got absolutely nothing to do with human feet at all.
You can see, if you look here at the doorstep, there's a sort of hollow in it. It's not because hundreds of people have walked on it, it's because Rastus, our pet wombat, used to sharpen his teeth on it while he was waiting for people to come out and feed him or let him in. He also bashed the door up, rather. We had him, he came to us about so big, with almost no fur on him, in a little shoebox. His mother had been knocked over and killed on the road, and we had quite a job feeding him to start with. There were no formulas for this sort of thing then, but we did have the goat herd, so we had goat's milk, and we sort of did a mixture of goat's milk, water and honey for them. It brought up most native animals. But of course he had a very small mouth, and you had to get the inner tubing from a valve on a bicycle to go into his little mouth and then into a big bottle of milk, and you would sit for about 40 minutes with Wombat on your lap while he fed. It took a very long time. Very boring. I used to have to sit and feed him most of the time. And he lived in a box under the sitting room, in the sitting room there, tucked away. We had a nice big box for him there. He grew up to be a really very big wombat.
As you can imagine, there's many a story surrounding Rastus, the pet wombat. Way too long for this sound file, unfortunately. Now it's time to go inside the front door to the family's living room, also the place where Heather's mother used to type her manuscripts.
This is my mother's desk. It was actually, we had it made from a couple of the leaves of the big dining table, which had multiple leaves and we didn't need them all. But this is the desk where she wrote all her books and her manuscripts and scripts for the ABC. She did a lot of work for the ABC in the early years and while still beginning to write children's books, because the first one didn't come out till 48. And this was actually her first typewriter. It was one of the very early portable typewriters. It's extremely heavy, but it's also almost indestructible. It's quite an interesting one. It's still usable, but it's a bit difficult to get the ribbons for it. You have to rewind them back onto the little spools now because the ribbon spools aren't the right size. And the little laptop desk over there was my great-grandmother's, Ellen Chance's. The books that my mother wrote are all in these bookcases here. She wrote 12 children's novels, starting off with They Found a Cave, which was the one that was filmed, and we've now got DVDs of it, of the film itself. Devil's Hill was also filmed for the ABC series Touch the Sun in 88. She won a large number of awards with her books. Three of the Australian Children's Book Council Awards, and she also, for Tangara, which was probably her most interesting and successful book in many ways, got an honour certificate from the Hans Christian Andersen Society, which award books, the IBI Society organised Hans Christian Andersen Award, and they award a major award and special honour prizes to people every 2 years and hold a conference in a different country every 2 years to do so. She was, as far as I can discover, the first Australian, let alone the first Tasmanian, to actually have one of her books listed as an honour book there. Later on, other Australian authors have won awards through that. But of course, her books were all published in England.
Around the walls of this room, with its large fireplace and old comfy chairs, you'll notice all manner of paintings and photos hanging on the walls. Heather explains.
Almost immediately facing the door is a really big fireplace with a fire screen in front of it, with a couple of poems on it. One by my Uncle Kay on Day Dawn, when it was his cottage up here, and the other written by Clive Sampson, who was quite a well-known poet from England who came out here. The pictures, starting from the door, there's one of the house before we built onto the back by Taz Felberg, who used to work with the ABC. There's one by the door going out towards the back, with Captain Colburn Pierce, of various native animals that you can see up here. They're not always in proportion. He was a retired Indian Army officer who worked for a long time at the museum doing dioramas for them. Then there's a picture by Webb, I think out probably Lower Midlands, somewhere of that part. I gave my father that one. The big ghost house is a Harry Kelly. He was a painter and lived up at Kempton, was a friend of my mother's from the time she worked at Cadbury's, and that picture was hers, in fact. We have other Kellys. She really liked coloured pictures, and we rather liked black and white pictures, so that one was hers. There's a sketch of one of the first Cairn Terriers we had, Bunty. We had photographer J. Barry Lawrence, who had a big studio in Hobart for very many years, used to come up here a lot. And he tried to photograph Bunty, and every time he photographed her, the little beast would shut her eyes. He got so fed up, he actually did a drawing of her, which is rather nicer than a photograph, I think.
If you haven't had a good look around the outside of the house, check out the huge macrocarpa tree at the front, planted in 1918 to commemorate the end of World War I. The garden itself, it was always a struggle. If it wasn't water shortages, it was the wildlife invasion. And then there were bushfires, always a big threat in the Australian bush.
Well, we'd had two very bad bushfires through here, 80-81. Both had been deliberately lit, one by the Hobart Fire Brigade, and the other by somebody who was trying to burn out the neighbours. They'd had a row with them. And the wind turned and the fire came straight up here and burnt right through the valley. It came right up under the big macrocarpa, right up onto the veranda and under the veranda.
Chauncey Vale Wildlife Sanctuary owes a great debt to the people and organisations that support, manage and fund it. Organisations like the Friends of Chauncey Vale, the Southern Midlands Council and the Tasmanian Land Conservancy. Heather and her family hoped that this unique piece of Midlands bush would be used by generations of Australians in the years ahead for relaxation, scientific study, for all manner of things. I hope you've enjoyed our glimpses into the lives of the Chauncey and Masterman families. And we also acknowledge a great debt of gratitude to Heather Chauncey.